Hello, welcome to Recovery Internet Radio, brought to you live and direct from Straight Stuff Studios. Hope you're having a beautiful weekend and getting ready for an excellent 4th of July. Go Blackhawks.
Blackhawks.
Yeah. Well, hey, we haven't been on since last Sunday, so, you know, just had to throw that out there.
All right.
Hey, I just want, this is episode number 75 in our just over a year of broadcasting here, and you know, thanks for joining us again tonight here on Sunday at 8 p.m. and every Sunday at 8 p.m. We just have a quick couple of shout-outs to some friends and supporters. Just want to say that we really like a Double Take band. They're a Chicago band. They do covers. They do current music, old stuff, good stuff, all kinds of stuff.
Dance music?
Mm-hmm. Like,
I don't think they do rap.
No rap. Okay, well, if you're, sorry about that.
I know you guys are bummed.
Check them out, though. They've got a show coming up at Keys Steak and Seafood in Glendale Heights the 13th at 8:30. So if you're interested, check them out. They're at doubletakechicago.com. So check out their website. They've got all their...
Say hi to our friend, 10 Gallon, Bob Harper.
Hey, old Bob.
Bob 10 Gallon Harper, yeah.
Putting out the good stuff.
We're not even going to go into the explanation.
Just go check them out, yeah. What else we got to say about? We also want to say a quick word about a mentoring program. It's called Sidekicks Mentoring. It's a youth mentoring program. It's a no-cost volunteer program designed to offer structure and support for maintaining a healthy, sober lifestyle. It's a free program. It's you know, really targeted at kids that maybe aren't quite right for big brothers, big sisters.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Does that sound about right?
Description, yeah.
I think that's a pretty good description. But check us out. We'd love to offer you any assistance we can here, and check that out at sidekicksmentoring.org.
Do we have a phone number?
Sure do. It's 815-451-7641. And as a special bonus, I'll be the one answering the phone. Yours truly. Chris Atwater. So, you know, if you want to hear more of this wonderful voice, go ahead. I think that's all I got. Rick?
Yeah. I think I'm going to save a couple of – we have a couple other shout-outs, which I'm going to maybe save for halftime, because I wanted to mention we had a friend that we lost just a couple of days ago. Gentleman's name was Jim Nader. And he was the host and I believe the producer of a show called The Magnificent Obsession, which actually, as I read about it, was a show that has a format very similar to this one. And we had actually emailed Jim a few times trying to get a hold of him because we would have liked to interview him for this show. And that never did happen, and Jim passed away recently, but he... He was a pioneer in doing this kind of stuff, and he had been doing it for 20 years. I had no idea, but he had been doing it for 20 years, The Magnificent Obsession on National Public Radio. And, we'll miss Jim, and we'll dedicate this show a little bit to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
In his honor. So, anyway, welcome everybody tonight to Recovery Internet Radio and our show Straight Stuff on Addictions. And our tag tonight is The Spirit of Recovery. And our guests are Chuck and Chris. And glad you're here this Sunday night. You can call in for questions or comments at 323-792-2977, or you can tweet at
Rick Atwater.
Yeah, there you go.
Live during the show. Right.
You can get right into the show. Yeah. And please check recoveryinternetradio.com for this. You can listen to this show live on our website, or you can listen to all of our archive shows as well.
You certainly can. You can also subscribe to us via podcast and just get your weekly dose directly to your iDevice.
We're going to say your weekly fix, but it just
doesn't sound good.
Yeah. No, mm-hmm. Wouldn't be good. Okay, so maybe we'll get started. The Spirit of Recovery, and I guess we've got a couple of guys who have some experience with the spiritual part of the program, and of course, everybody in the program has some experience with the spiritual part of the program. They just might not know it when they start, which brings me to my first question. Did you guys know what you were getting into in that regard? I mean, did you know it was I mean, they talk about recovery in the 12-step program. It's a spiritual solution. So how did that work for you?
I did not. I had sampled AA, and so knew, you know, there was God stuff involved and the stuff that's in the steps, but went out for a little postgraduate work, and when I finally struggled back, all I really wanted to do was figure out how to stop drinking. I went for a year and a half and couldn't stay sober for even a day. And so I got to this counselor guy and said, told him all my troubles and told him I had tried AA and it didn't work for me and all the other stuff. And I was just looking for a solution. And he got me back into AA, which I thought was a dumb idea, but it still seems to be working. But no, I had no clue at the time that there was anything spiritual involved. I was so broken that I was just willing to do what I was told step by step by step. And the realization that it was a spiritual program didn't come until later in the game for this kid.
Or, yeah, much less what all that would mean and what it would come to mean and all of that sort of stuff. So if they just said, you know, play hopscotch three times a day and
I'm on it.
Drink 9 glasses of water.
Got it.
I'm there. Okay. That's spiritual? Cool. I got it. So what about you, Chris? Did you know what you were getting into?
I did not either. I was maybe a little bit different case than Chuck because I didn't sign up for this gig. I was actually 17 years old when I got sober. I was forced into treatment by my parents and my current psychiatrist at the time. So it took me a long time to really understand, first of all, that I was qualified for this program, and second of all, to learn what this program was all about. So
it wasn't like I'll do anything. It wasn't about I'll do. In fact, it might have been kind of the opposite. Yeah.
Well, I can't say that maybe because there was a huge relief that came off my shoulders when I didn't have to pretend. I was going on what I thought was going to be a 6-week vacation. Because I was going to get out. I was struggling with everything in life. I was actually still in high school and was flunking out, and everything was falling apart around me, and I knew I couldn't do anything, and I knew I had a problem. I just didn't understand anything about that problem and the fact that it, you know, what the extent of that problem was. So.
Yeah. So it wasn't, yeah, it wasn't quite.
No, I didn't walk in here thinking I was going to find God. So
you didn't?
No.
Okay.
I didn't even walk in here thinking I was going to stop drinking.
So, that was a surprise, too?
I thought that was going to be temporary.
Uh-huh. Bummer. So when did you find out? When did you, maybe it would be a better question to ask, when did you start to find out what was going to be required in the spiritual department? And what was that? Was there an event or a moment when you started to figure it out?
I had to figure out what a spiritual program was. There's an appendix in the back of the big book that tells us what a spiritual experience is. There's a lot of mystery involved in that. You read some of the stories and the old stories in the big book, and there were a lot of burning bushes and that sort of thing, and I sure didn't see any of those coming up in my life. But I cheated a little and took a glance at that appendix before coming down here, and it talks about just a personality change, a profound personality change that allows us to beat the drinking problem. We come up with a different approach to life, and I guess I started seeing different approach to life in little bits and chunks. The stuff that was such a problem to me when I couldn't stop drinking for even a day turned out to be interesting background and challenges after I was sober for a while, just a different approach to life. You see something coming down the pike, and it's not suddenly something that's going to crush you. It's, you know, you don't have to walk around continually paranoid.
No.
You just wind up living life. And that's all part, I think, of the spiritual experience they talk about it in there. It's just a different way of looking at life. And that came slow but sure. But and it, it's still developing even today. I got some areas that need to be worked on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure we'll get to that. So, first of all, I think a lot of people would be shocked at that definition of spirituality. What, wait, doesn't it have more like deities involved and whatnot, or you know, doesn't it have more?
Well, what it says in the book is why don't we take a look at it? It's
all right.
A pretty simple sentence. It says, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. And that's kind of how it was for me. I'm a willpower driven kind of guy, and I couldn't stop drinking for a day. And I got here and started doing the, you know, play hopscotch. And there it was, a day, 2 days, 3 days. Didn't take long to realize that there was a power at work in my life that was an awful lot stronger than I was, because here I was sober.
The fact that you weren't, that wasn't something that you were able to do with the willpower.
Absolutely right. And you know, I got laughed at in my home group for kind of a long time as I kind of morphed from this guy that started out saying, I don't know what this power is. I don't know if it wears dresses. I don't know if it lives in the clouds or if it's got anything to do with all that Catholic upbringing I had. I just know there's a power, and it doesn't have it in for me, and I'm sober today, and that's enough.
That's
I don't
enough.
Want to cross-examine it.
Yeah, okay. And you could.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you would be capable of cross-examination. In fact, I don't want to go too far there, but this is something you could easily overthink, is what you're saying.
I'm pretty sure that when I got struck drunk the first time through AA, I was working on the third step, and I started at the back end trying to understand God.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of like a hot stove to me. I didn't want to do any of that.
So you tried that method of...
And then I was around being this spiritual midget for a few years in the group, and suddenly started saying stuff that sounded a little more spiritual, and I just got laughed at. You know, here he comes, our spiritual giant.
So you went from spiritual midget to spiritual giant.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah, and so like it sounds like for you, it's a pretty simple thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. What about Chris? What's your take on that? Was there an event or a early in your sobriety that got you started with this, or that where you recognized that it was either needing to happen or happening?
I think for me, I was witness to a lot of spiritual things. I was not very open to outside ideas, knowledge, anything for quite a while in my sobriety, but I was around a lot of people that had gone through it. I had a little bit of experiences, working with other people and getting a little bit of that little shot of serenity here and there where, God was, knocking on my door a little bit.
Can you say what working with other people, what does that mean and how does that tie in?
Well, being around for a little while when I was first sober, it was, you get something that's fresh, that's just coming in, and you try and, help them get through the first couple of days or a couple of weeks, or helping them out with little issues. And it was the first time I'd ever experienced being outside of my own head, and I think that was kind of the entree where it maybe allowed God to sneak in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or what my conception of God was, but I much later in my sobriety I had the whole burning bush and everything, but early on it was very slow. I was very resistant to anything, but I had a sponsor who told me about when he got sober, everybody told him, when you get up in the morning, you get on your knees and you ask for help. And when you go to bed at night, you get on your knees and you say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, I feel kind of silly because, I don't believe. He said, we didn't play to believe. We told him, get on your knees and ask for help in the morning.
There's the hopscotch thing.
Yeah. So it was, he was big on doing the things that were going through the process. Whether you believed or not believed was not something that was part of his game plan. It was about doing the things, and I think doing that a little bit, and when you you read some of the literature and you read the big book, it's kind of hard to get through that without noticing there's something there. And like I said, I was resistant to a lot of it for a long time, but you know, you can only be around it for so long before it starts to sink in, you know, little osmosis.
So, yeah, there's a lot of similarities in the in there. You know, no, figuring it out is not really a part of this deal.
No, figuring out wasn't real good for me.
No, it was not real good. Figuring out was, and obviously that sponsor knew that about
yeah.
you.
Yeah, no, there was.
They didn't ask you to believe. We just asked you to get on your knees.
Yeah.
And you know that. Yeah, I can see that. So, all right, and you also said something about, you know, when you were helping others, you were out of your own head.
Yes.
So. What is that? I mean, what does that mean? Say something about being out of your own head, and how is that helpful?
A lot of this disease to me is it's a selfish self-centeredness. It's, you know, being self-absorbed. All I ever thought about was myself. You know, it's not what I think about me. What do you think about me? You know, and it was all I was... And I didn't know what...
Key word there
yeah.
being me, I
yeah.
think, right?
So, yeah. I mean, it was... There was... I didn't have a concept of how to get out of that, how to connect with anybody. It's like I walked around living in this bubble and nobody got in, you know. And when I started working with people a little bit, I started listening to what they were saying and being able to relate to them. I mean, a lot of the things, one of the probably most important things about this program for a lot of people that are in it is the fact that there's a connection between all of us, that we all just understand how each other think. You know, there's just some, there's a brotherhood there, there's a fellowship, there's something there where you can look at somebody who's going through it, and you know what that feels like. You know.
And would you say that that's part of the spiritual opening for you?
It was for me, absolutely, yeah. Because of my conception of God now is the fact that I think I hear God speaks to me through other people. You know, my conception of God is there in other people, and he's around all the time. I believe he's inside, but you know that speaker's broke in my head. So I have to listen to them outside in a lot of respects. So
yeah.
When I'm able to connect with somebody and talk to them, that was something that allowed
it. It opens up some
it
space.
It opened up a door for...
To not be thinking
yeah,
about you.
Yeah, for the spirit to get in me rather than...
Because
I had blocked it off on the inside,
yeah.
So I wasn't able to open that for the spirit to get in.
Did you have experience with working with other people when you first came in? Or did that not come until later? Or where did that come in for you? And how does it play into the spiritual part of the program?
It came in fairly early. I guess I recall one instance where I was fairly new, I don't know, a few months in or something like that, and hooked up with a guy, and we were talking before the meeting and after the meeting, and he's having a problem, and he asked me for some advice, and I was an advice giver. It was my job, okay? And so, my first reaction is to tell him exactly how to fix himself.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And I drew a breath, ready to start doing that, and suddenly I said, "You arrogant fool, you know about his problem now from a 90-second description, and you're going to solve it. What do we do here? We share our experience, our strength, and our hope." And
mm-hmm.
that's what I did, and that was almost a spiritual experience for me.
That it sounds like that might have been the first time in your life. But, yeah, good. You know, so, but relate for me how it, sharing your experience, strength, and hope rather than advice, telling somebody what to do, you know, sharing your own experience rather than telling somebody what to do, how does that tie to the spirit? What's the connection? Is that just not thinking about yourself enough or to let it in, or what is it?
No, I don't think it's quite that. I think when I look at what helped me most coming along, it was, partly it was the guys that told me that I needed to do this, the counselor that got me back and all the rest of that. But beyond that, the people at meetings, it was just they're willing to open their own hearts and their own lives to you so you could see how they address the problem and leave it to you to work it into your own life. And that's the kind of non-arrogant approach that I guess I feel like I'm kind of an arrogant, this is the way, now quit screwing around, do it, let's get done.
Right.
And it's a step in the direction of humility that takes me to only, you know, this is what worked for me. Maybe it'll work for you, maybe it won't.
So it's a step, so the... Yeah, and it's there's the humility, which is then there's a part, there's some piece of that that's you have to be humble enough to let the spirit in, I guess, or
absolutely.
Your spirituality.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's part of it. And then also you were saying that other people were sharing with you and in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds loving.
Yes.
If I could go, you know, way out on a limb and use that word, but it sounds loving. You know what I mean?
That's right. I mean, Chris said, you know, he spent his time thinking about him. I think that's a typical MO of people with alcoholism coming in.
Yeah.
And to learn that there are other people in the world and that they have to fit in too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard for some of us, like me, to even take help when somebody offers something. My first reaction is, no,
yeah.
I'm fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. I'll take care of it.
Yeah. But, when a guy wants to give you something, and, you know, you'd rather be doing something else, but you say, oh, thank you, because there's some relationship there. There's some brotherhood. It's all part of the – we're all God's kids playing in this game together.
Hmm.
That's what I've come to learn anyway, and I don't know if I knew it back then, but I was starting to learn those lessons.
Yeah. So you were becoming a part of that.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
You
think most alcoholics tend to be the lone wolf sorts?
In my experience,
oh.
Certainly me.
There's lone wolf, but there's also hostage takers. So.
Hostage takers? Yeah. What is that?
Well, it's just, I mean, we drag people into our little morass of horribleness.
Yeah.
You know,
so you, right?
I'd
rather be alone. But if I've got
to
be with somebody,
well,
I want you to be miserable.
Well, I used to make my sister sit with me while I drank. So cause she didn't want to be there. She didn't really care. And she wasn't doing anything. But I'd make her sit there while I drank. So
you wouldn't be lonely.
I guess I'm not sure what it was. I guess it was just I didn't want to drink alone. I mean, eventually I started drinking alone because it was too hard to find, and I wasn't going to drink alone. But I think you pull it in. I mean, that's probably a whole other discussion. But you know, but Chuck hit on the whole thing for me is the whole humility thing. And when you said, you know, they just talk about being, you know, when I came in here I was a part from, and then you come in here long enough, you're a part of something. I think that there's an empathy when you're working with other people that I never experienced before. You know, nobody could ever understand me. Nobody could ever think what I thought and experience what I experienced and things like that. When I came in here and I started talking to other people, I started realizing I know what they feel.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, after a while, I got the understanding, well, maybe they understand what I feel.
Yeah.
So I think there's a whole connection there. That was just
very
spiritual in nature because it was never there before.
And I suppose if you become part of that opens the door for you to become part of something bigger than that and bigger than that and so on and so forth. And the term spiritually bankrupt, can we talk about that for a minute? Was that something, I mean, is that a term that you understand what that means? Would that describe you at that time?
Yeah, and for me it was just pretty simple. It was just hopeless.
Oh, okay.
I was going down the drain. I didn't know how to stop it, and you know, let's finish the game.
Mm-hmm. Just play it out.
As bankrupt as I ever want to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I agree 100%. No hope. I mean, it took me a long time to realize that I'd gotten to that point because I mean, I didn't know anything else. You know, and that's I think a lot of alcoholics, you don't ever know anything different, so you're not exposed to anything different. I know for me, it took me a long time. Being in this program and seeing what living without the booze and the drugs and the whole life thing, what it was like without that, to understand that there was something different than that. And it took me a long time to realize, yeah, there was no hope, there was no trust, there was no hope, there was no anything. So that
was your normal?
Absolutely. It got to that point. I didn't know how I got there, but I know that that's where I ended up. So I would definitely agree with that.
That's pretty scary. When hopeless is normal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
You know, one of the things that was going on in my head was that it's like your AA program is like, the analogy is, it's like a crowbar for people who have a hard time opening, you know, the alcohol is the crowbar, whatever, the booze is the crowbar, or maybe the program is the crowbar. I'm not sure how the analogy works.
Maybe the booze is the nail.
The booze is the nail. And
the crowbar, God is the crowbar.
God is the crowbar.
The spiritual part is the crowbar that opened that door for me. I mean,
yeah.
Every time I was drinking and doing drugs, I was nailing the door shut even more. So, I mean, that's,
and not even knowing it.
Yeah, not knowing it. I'm thinking I'm protecting myself or something maybe. You know, I'm going to keep all the evil out, you know.
Did you ever?
The problem is the evil's already there. Or the bad stuff was already there.
Never figured out.
Locking it in, but I'm locking it out.
Yeah. Never figured out what you were protecting yourself from?
Well, I'm sure there's a million different things you could say it from, but I mean, it's just, you know, it was fear. I mean, fear of the world and fear of how things work and everything else. So it was like, you know, if I stay here, I'm going to be safe. This is what I know. Mm. And the problem is you're not, because, it, you know, sponsor told me once a long time ago that, you know, when I was home, I was, you know, mine was going crazy. He didn't know what to do. He said, where are you at? I said, I'm in my apartment. He said, who's there with me? He said, don't get out of there. You're in there with a madman.
Yeah, okay. So, Chuck, you already spoke to this a little bit, but how would you guys say that your spiritual, you know, like a lot of people, like you said, a lot of people, all they want to do is stop drinking. They're not thinking about any of this kind of stuff that we're talking about here. This is all way up here for a guy who's like walking in the door. He just wants to stop drinking. So how does the spiritual part of the program, that doesn't even sound right. How does the program, because it's all spiritual, relate to not drinking? How do we get those two things to click, to work together? When you walk in the door, what happened?
I think it comes with the second step and the realization that this hopeless guy that came in and took the first step and said, I'm powerless over alcohol, which is an admission that unless you find a power greater than yourself, you're toast. You're done.
Right. Toast is not in the step, is it?
Finds a power greater than himself, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And just latching on to that and doing it again and doing it the next day and the day after that, and pretty soon you got a week sober, and that's magic.
Yeah.
And it morphs into, you know, you work the steps and you find a God and all the rest of that. But he starts to come in, I think, right at the beginning and through other people. If you get a sponsor right away and you're talking to each other or whatever, just whatever you're doing at that time to keep you away from the booze and not sitting around focused on not drinking, you might as well be focused on drinking.
Yeah.
You want to be doing something useful, something to realize that you're okay and that this will work. And after a week or two or whatever, you see that it is, and you just kind of grow from there.
So we'll keep doing that.
Yeah.
I would agree with what Chuck was saying. I know one of the things I think it's in the doctor's opinion or something else there, they talked about history is strewn with people that were able to get over the alcoholic drink. With every one of them, it was a spiritual experience that did it. And it was funny because I went to a Jesuit university and I was forced to take a lot of theology and philosophy and things like that. And we used to read a lot about the saints. And you read stuff like Saint Augustine, they were all drunks. I mean, were these guys drunk and a drug addict and everything else? They did everything they could, but they had this massive psychic change.
Mm-hmm.
This God came out and touched them, and they changed everything, you know. I mean, I don't know for sure he was drinking wine, but you read, you know, his confessions, and
mm-hmm.
he's got a lot of good ones in there. you know, and that's the only thing that's ever been able to cure alcoholism, as far as I'm aware, that's actually documented, has been a psychic change, you know, related to
mm-hmm.
A spiritual experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, I think, you know, that's the one thing we have to have. I mean, and it's, I didn't come in here seeking that, and it wasn't something that came right away, but it was something that I eventually came to understand and, I guess, embrace
mm-hmm.
to a certain extent. And I think everybody that I know that's I guess, worked the program successfully for a long period of time has, to one degree or another, and embrace that as well.
So, yeah, it grew on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think what we'll do is we'll take a break maybe get a fly swatter or something. You guys are driving me crazy.
Yeah, if there's any slight pauses in the conversation, there's a swat
I don't want to swat him because it'll come through the mic. But anyway,
you'll have your chance right about now. We're gonna take five minutes. We're gonna listen to it. You know, I think we were just kind of joking around about maybe playing this, and you know what? It's gonna happen now. So
what are we playing?
Well, this is for those of you that remember George Thorogood and the Destroyers singing "One Bourbon, One Shot." And one beer.
Okay.
Now we got the 8.5 minute version, but I think we might trim it down a little bit.
Okay,
so
we'll give it about five.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you in five.
Good first.
I want to tell you a story about the house in blue. I come home one Friday. I had to tell the landlady I'd lost my job. She said, that don't confront me, long as I get my money next Friday. Now next Friday I come, I didn't get the rent, and out the door I went. So I goes to the landlady. I said, you let me slide. I have the rent for it tomorrow, the next day I don't know. So say, let me slide it on, you know, people. I notice when I come home in the evening, she ain't got nothing nice to say to me. But for 5 years, she was so nice. Lord, she would love a dove. I come home one particular evening. The landlady said, you got the rent money yet? I said, no, can't find no job. That's why I ain't got no money to pay the rent. She said, I don't believe you're trying to find no job. Said, I seen you today. You were standing on a corner, leaning up against a post. I said, but I'm tired. I've been walking all day. She said, that don't confront me. Long as I get my money next Friday. Now next Friday I come, I didn't have a rent, and out the door I went. So I go down the street, down to my good friend's house. I said, look, man, I'm outdoors, you know. Can I stay with you maybe a couple days? He said, oh, let me go and ask my wife. He come out of the house, I could see in his face. I know there was no. He said, I don't know, man. She kind of funny, you know. I said, I know. Everybody funny. Now you funny too. So I go back home. I tell the landlady, I got a job. I'm going to pay the rent. She said, yeah. I said, oh, yeah. And then she was so nice. Lord, you would love it, love it. So I go in my room, pack up my things, and I go. I slip on out the back door. Down the streets I go. She hollering about the front rent. She'll be lucky to get in the back rent. She ain't gonna get none of it. So I stop in a local bar, you know, people. I go to the bar. I rent my coat. I call the bartender. I said, look, man, come down here. He got down there. So what you want? A one bourbon. I don't know when. I've been drinking bourbon whiskey. Got some gin. Gonna get high, man. I'm gonna get loose. Need me a triple shot of that juice. Gonna get drunk, don't you have no fear. I want one bourbon, one shot, one beer. One bourbon, one shot, one beer. But I'm sitting out.
drink, man, I'm gonna get gas. Gonna get high, man, I ain't had enough. Need me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk, won't you listen right here? I want one bourbon, one shot, and one beer, one bourbon.
Hey, thank you for joining us tonight, and hope you had a quick break there too. Thanks for being here again this week for Recovery Internet Radio. We've been talking with Chuck and Chris. What's our show this week? The Spirit of Recovery.
Yeah.
So if you're just joining us, we're happy to have you around, and hope you enjoy the music. We felt it was appropriate. Inappropriate?
It was more inappropriate than anything, but
that works just
as
well.
It was his idea.
There you go. They just threw out some names, and I make it happen. So
I think we've decided that it was a sort of a first step song, really, more, right? We're going to kind of go forward from
there. There you go. Well, that's a good place to get back into it.
Exactly.
So again, if you're just joining us, you can reach us live on the air here for the last half of our show at 323-792-2977. You can also check us out on recoveryinternetradio.com, and we're going to get right back to it. Here's Rick.
Okay. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
So this is the question. So the line of questioning I have now is that what you didn't want to talk about that much. Or no, it's more like you didn't have the answers to, I think, is what you said. But I guess that what I want to ask about is what when you found out, or when it became clear that your faith in something greater than yourself was going to be what saved your sorry behind. What did you have any questions about? I mean, did anything come up for you like, you know, like what is this? You know, like. Did you have questions about it? What is this all about? Or
I hate to give you a real short answer, Rick, but I think the answer is no. You know,
okay.
It was working, and that was fine with me. And as I kind of progressed through things, I got more and more friendly with this higher power character.
You didn't have a lot of questions. Let me ask you another way, and then I'll ask Chris. Well, let me ask you first. Did you have questions about it?
I had about a gazillion. So I was. And
so you could make up for anything that Chuck didn't have.
Absolutely. And I don't know if we were talking a little bit in the break, and Chuck had talked about being raised Catholic, and I don't remember being raised in any particular religion. So I don't know that I had a background in anything to latch onto.
You think that would be for more questions?
And I guess, you know, some people, it's different for everybody, but I know for me, I just didn't have a concept. I had nothing to hold on to. It was a whole new experience, and I had to come up with that on my own, and I guess I struggled with it for quite a while, so.
So give me, like, what kind of questions did you have?
Well, I mean, the whole question about religion versus spirituality, and, you know, what is God, and, you know, and then the whole thing with religion in general. I mean, I was a history major in college, and going through that, I mean, you look at a lot of the things that have been done in history in the name of religion, you know, anything like that. I latched onto that because, you know, I'm good at latching onto resentment for all kinds of stuff. So if I find something wrong with things, you know, that was it. So it was something that, it was a tool, I guess, that my ism brain could hold on to, you know, kind of refute that and say, well, it can't possibly be real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, I think for me, I had to find some peace with that before I could, I guess, have a concept of my own, you know, and it took a long time to to come to terms with that.
So how did you get those questions answered?
A lot of it, as I said, was being around the program and seeing things happen to other people, seeing the miracle happen for other people, you know. And I was never, and most people aren't, particularly early in their sobriety, you don't see how you're changing, but you see how other people are.
Right.
And I think there was a lot there that I've seen. And, you know, I kind of lived vicariously through other people. I was resistant to a lot of the things in the program, but I was running with a good crowd, I guess, because they were the guys that were very, you know, seriously working the program and doing a lot of sponsorship and a lot of things like
Did
that.
Did they see the changes in you?
Yeah, but I was a slow changer. So unlike a lot of things in my life, my appetite for the spiritual thing, I took in very small bites. Everything else was not quite that way, but I had to take it and mull it over and think about it and come to terms with it before I could ever get there. And the changes to me were small, but then what happened to me was, as I made reference to earlier, is I had that burning bush, you know, about 10 years into my recovery that, you know, that blew everything out of the water for me. I mean, that changed my whole recovery and my whole personality.
Okay. Would you say you had a burning bush experience or no?
I don't think so.
How would you classify your experience?
Well, I think I went through my AA part of recovery, and one of the, you know, and a couple of the real highlights of that for me were to realize that there was a power greater than myself, and second, and probably even more important, that he didn't have it in for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I just was able to kind of progress and develop some sort of relationship or even friendship with that power. Kind of stumbled around a couple of religions in the meantime.
Well, we want to talk about that, but that he didn't have it out for me, did that come from your religious background?
It might have. Part of it, yeah, I was raised Catholic, and we only lived a block from the church, and I did the altar boy stuff and all that. I was gonna after I finished grammar school, go off and be a priest, and my father wouldn't let me. And then I went to high school with the Christian Brothers and finished that, and wanted to go off and be a Christian Brother, and my father wouldn't let me. And so then I went to college and learned how to drink. And
I thought you were gonna say, and your father wouldn't let you.
And
apparently he did.
I just stopped going to church. It just went away that quick. And
do you think that was the drinking and the church stopping going to church related, or was it just?
I don't think they were related. I think it was just kind of coincidental. It was that part of your life where you're bulletproof and you're going to live forever and all the rest of that, and let's have some fun.
And off
hard to get up on Sunday morning, too.
And off you went.
Yep.
Yeah. And then so. That sounds like a pretty clean break from the traditional path. But do you think that was where the idea of the gotcha thing came from, or
no,
not sure?
I guess I didn't answer that part of your question, Rick. The Catholic education back then was pretty much God's keeping score about all the bad things you did, and it's punishing God and all the rest of that. And then I finally just let the whole thing go. So I figure, you know, if there's a place in hell, it's for me.
Mm-hmm.
And
the chair with your name on it.
Let's get on with it. And so, you know.
Right.
So I grew up with kind of a punishing God, and found one in AA that didn't have it in for me. So I was willing to talk to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to me how somehow that got turned, how that one got left behind and the other one showed up.
I think it was just, you know, when I was at my lowest and couldn't get a day sober, and this power came into my life, and then I had two.
Mm-hmm.
It was, that was just, I don't know how it happened. I didn't want to analyze anything about it. I just knew there was a good power out there, and we were okay with each other.
And you didn't need to know any more than that.
That's right.
Yeah. In fact, it sounds like you didn't want to know anything.
Absolutely right.
Because that didn't work the first time.
Yep.
So, and you said you did have a burning bush experience. So let's talk about that.
Well, and mine was as a direct result of working with another alcoholic as well, which is why it's been kind of very important.
Pretty important.
I was about about 10 years sober, I'd moved out of state for a job that was supposed to be this big career move that ended up not going the way I expected it to. Where I was living, I tried to get plugged into the AA program out there, but I was not I didn't agree with how everything was run. It was a very different program than I was used to, a lot less personal, I guess. All the meetings were as the Spirit moved you. It wasn't, you know, everybody gets a chance to talk type of thing. So, you know, I for a long time didn't talk to meetings. I'm like, hey, Steve, you're not gonna ask me to talk.
So say what as the Spirit moved you means.
So as the Spirit moves you is you know, there's a topic brought up or whatever is talked about, and then the only people that talk are the people that speak up and say, okay, I got something to say about that.
It's not
so
like you go.
It wasn't like it goes around the table like a lot of meetings where it'll start on one side and it goes around the room and everybody gets
okay.
their
so,
chance to hear.
Yeah.
So I had a hard time with that and some of the format things or whatever, and it was hard getting plugged in. The area I was living in Reno, Nevada, it's a very transient place. And people are not into very deep relationships because everybody's going to move anyway, you know. And I was struggling for a long time, and I had a guy ask me to sponsor him. Which I think, you know, was something God nudged him in that direction to take care of me now, because I don't know why this guy would have asked me to sponsor him, but he did. He was a little older than I was, and, you know, I worked with him, and, you know, my method of working with guys is always to take them through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first 164 pages, work on that, and, you know, we were sitting down, and, you know, I'd have him read a chapter, and I told him, underline the things that are important to you, and I'll underline the things of mine. And I'm reading it, and I'm, like, you know, underlining everything in the chapter. He's like, holy crap, when did they put this in that book? You know, I wasn't reading it anymore. And I started seeing where all the spiritual stuff was there, and I'm working with him, and he's not getting it. And I'm trying to, okay, what can I do to help Mitch out here? You know, I'm going through it, and the next thing I know, I'm on this massive spiritual high, and he's the same miserable dude that he was when he asked me to sponsor him. And, you know, it was just all of a sudden I had God, and God was in me and around all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I still had the same miserable job. I still didn't enjoy living out there. All the things were there, but I felt God in my heart 24/7. I mean, it was probably about for a period of several months. I know that during this time, I had come home for a visit, and I used to go to a Friday night men's group in Elmhurst where I was going at the time, and I spoke at the meeting when I came back, and my sponsor cried and said anybody that didn't believe in God and knew you before and heard you talk tonight would be absolutely convinced.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a burning bush. I mean, it was like I had no doubts.
Mm-hmm.
About anything at that point. It was, and I can't explain how it was or what it was. It was just reading the things in the book and trying to help this other guy, and it's just everything rang true to me. And, you know, unfortunately it didn't work out for him, but it was a life-altering event for me, so.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, but it didn't necessarily stay that intensity.
No, I didn't have the intensity was there for, like I said, for several months. You know, life interferes with things sometimes, and I know that I've gone on, and, you know, I didn't hold on to that as tight as I could. But it's easy for me to kind of look back now and think, you know, boy, I had this awesome, you know, thing with God, and how could I let go of that, and why can't I get back to that? But I have to look back and say that since that time, there's never been any doubt in my life, and at any point in my life that God was there and God was available. You know, the thing I've struggled with since that point is maybe opening that inner door for me to let that back in, you know.
The amazing thing to me is, like, you know, now, like, switch back to that 17-year-old kid that was in treatment, didn't want to be there, and now fast forward 10 years to this guy who's absolutely an absolute believer. How can you, we could talk all night long and never explain that or even get even close, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, that's a pretty miraculous thing.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, and I don't think it's any less, I don't think your experience is any less miraculous. It's just miraculous in a different way.
I think that's right, yeah.
It's just a different process. And that's really, I'm glad we're talking about that, because that's really kind of what I'd hope that we would be able to get a sense of tonight is that there's a lot of different ways to get where you need to get in this operation that you guys are involved in, in this group of drunks or whatever they are. So let me ask you this: how do you this speaks to that thing you were talking about, Chuck, about being involved with some different religious organizations. How the question is, how do you maintain your spiritual the spiritual part of your life? How do you maintain that? What do you do today?
Well, I go to church now. I guess I've been struggling a bit with trying to find a religion. I like to go to church and to do some things with a church because I think it's a way of being near this higher power that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And wife and I spent a lot of time in England. Always impressed by walking into English churches that were built in 1400 or something, mm-hmm. and they're just awe-inspiring.
Yeah.
You can walk in there and feel this is God's house.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk to him. And so we did Anglicans for a while, tried that back here, and it just wasn't a good experience. It wasn't, well, enough said. The steps say we should do something about meditation in step 11. So I had the answer to that. I went and tried to learn how to meditate with the Buddhists for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And the Buddhist religion, not necessarily a philosophy, but the religion is very much self-centered. It's very much self-driven. You control how you build up your karma and all the rest of that stuff. And right at the outset, I went to the abbot and said, if I've got to be reliant on solely myself, I don't belong here because that's going to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
I know for sure.
We've been there.
Yeah. Done that. Yeah. Doesn't work. Ran that experiment for a long time. Doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we came to some agreement on that, and I meditated with them for a while, and then we got bored with that. And since then, we've hooked up with the Lutherans, and,
mm-hmm.
and they're a nice crowd. It's a real good church. There's a lot going on, a very energetic pastor, and there's a lot of things to do, and I enjoy doing some of it. And I find I'm not as much an evangelist as some of them would like me to be, but, I get along. And there's some things I don't agree with, but I can do some things for other people there in the context of that church that
mm.
that kind of helped me. And then I do a lot of stuff that is not a lot of stuff, but I do some stuff in AA. I sponsor some people. I come to things like this and go to meetings and all of that, and that keeps me kind of tuned in. And so I'm at a position, at a point, I think, in my life where I just kind of have a continuing dialogue with my higher power. I don't spend a lot of time kneeling down. I blow hot and cold on meditating and all the rest of that, but it's friendly enough that just before last Monday I was able to say, and I know you're not supposed to pray for stuff for yourself, but last Monday I just kind of raised the issue with them of, wouldn't it be nice if the Blackhawks managed to get this one away in Game 6, because we all know what a crapshoot Game 7 is.
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be, your way, of course, but wouldn't it be nice?
And it was clearly a higher power thing. I mean, how could you,
It took up to the last 30 seconds.
Yeah, he must have forgotten
that for a while.
About 2 minutes left in the game, right?
But I get it that this is how I think you used the phrase stay close to or do things with your higher power, and that's what you're.
That's what I try to do, and once in a while he slips away, and I do I kind of go off on some tangents from time to time, but if you kind of stay hooked up and try and use that moral compass as some guide to what you're doing, you ought to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what religion you're in, I think that a lot of them kind of amount to sort of the same thing. You're praying to the same guy. It depends on what language you're using. that's my take on it anyway.
Okay.
Convict me as a heretic.
Guilty. So, how do you stay connected? What do you do?
Well, I mean, I'm obviously I didn't start with the same thing that Chuck did, but there was a long time, you know, that I wouldn't have anything to do with religion at all. But I've actually found the last several years, I guess it's in the seeking, is I think, you know, Chuck referenced the 11th step and, you know, seeking through prayer and meditation. It's the seeking that's important, you know, and if I'm opening myself up to stuff, and I found myself opening myself up to stuff the last couple of years that I was never even willing to consider, you know, years ago. I mean, years ago, you mentioned, you know, Jesus or the Bible, and I had friggin' iron doors slamming shut in my head, and I didn't listen to anything else that was said, you know, and now I've actually found myself, you know, kind of looking at a lot of these different things, a lot of literature that's out there. There's a lot of, things about, you know, whether it's Christianity or books like The Shack that talk about, you know, a guy finding, you know, his God and, you know, looking a little bit more stuff, infinite way things, you know, just, I think it's in the seeking. You know, I've done a little bit, I've dabbled with the Buddhism thing and the meditations, and I've dabbled with Tai Chi and different things, but I can't say that I have anything that's set in stone. But you know, I'm looking and I'm seeking and I'm trying to make that connection on a daily basis. You know?
And that's what you're saying is the seeking is.
Yeah, it's the seeking. I think that's important. I mean, that's the part that, you know, if I'm actively trying to improve that conscious contact further that relationship, I think is the important part. And you know, it's sometimes a struggle and hardwired to think a certain way, I think, and I'm trying to get new software in there, but you know, the machine only runs on certain kinds of stuff. Sometimes.
Yeah, so need an upgrade to the operating system. So okay, so let's talk for a minute. Let's just talk for a minute about misperceptions. Any things that you think are, you would consider like myths about the AA program, as you understand it, of course, you know, myths or misperceptions, especially as it revolves around the spiritual part of the program. What things do you think would you like to like kind of clear up, or what have you learned that you thought maybe was, one way and it turns out to be another?
Boy, that's a hard question, Rick. Why don't we ask Chris to answer it?
All right. Or I could just talk for a while.
Well, I mean, obviously, there's the main thing that seems to be brought out is, you know, it's a cult, and you know, it's a lot of people make the joke that, you know, oh, hi, Chris, or whatever, when you go to a meeting. But I think that the misconception is that it is some sort of a cult, and AA is trying to force you to believe a certain way or anything, and that's really not the case. The purpose of the program is to allow you to find a concept of a higher power and to further that relationship. You know, all the book is filled with little nuggets of things. Our purpose is to fit ourselves to maximum service to God and our fellows. You know, is part of the eighth step in the book. You know, our code, the code of AA is love and tolerance of others. You know, it's about less thinking about ourselves and more thinking about other people, but you know, which is a lot of these concepts are pretty simple things to understand. I mean, one of my favorite lines in the book is in We Agnostics, and it says, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live life on a spiritual basis are not only easy alternatives to face. And as an alcoholic, I read that and think, boy, you're right, that's a tough one there.
Yeah, let me think about
that. Yeah, but you can throw that out to the general population. Let's see, you're going to die an alcoholic death, or you could work on some kind of a relationship with a higher power.
And you get to choose, right?
Yeah, you get to choose.
You get to do it the way you want to do it.
Yeah, I'm assuming a normal thinker, a normal person that doesn't have the disease that I have, it would be a pretty simple and straightforward response to that. But for me, and I think for a lot of alcoholics, it's a struggle, you know, because letting go of these things is the hardest thing. But that's what this whole program is about. It's about building a relationship with a higher power and having a relationship with other people and then letting go.
And I think one of the, flat out, so you're talking about the cult thing. People think it's a cult, but it's not, because there's a lot of choices involved. Some people think, I think, that it's a religious organization.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about religion, so why should they not think it's a religious organization? I mean,
I don't think it is, because I look at religions and I think they're probably mostly focused on how to live this life in order to get a good deal in the next one. And Alcoholics Anonymous is figuring out how to live today to stay sober. And I think that's a huge difference. And you can find some help from that as an individual. If you're a Christian, you can migrate to a Christian religion. If you're if you're a Buddhist, you can probably migrate to a Buddhist religion, even though they've got no higher power. You can
keep your own and go there and meditate or
whatever. Find some power stronger than you and go with it.
Okay. And there's no payoff here. There's no graduation. There's nobody's a president. Nobody, you know, ends up retiring with $1 million in the program. You know, there's nothing. The sole purpose of this program is for, you know, all of us individuals to come together as a group and help each other. I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, there's no dues or fees. There's no, I mean, none of this. And that's the part I think a lot of people have a hard time wrapping their mind around, particularly here in modern times when, you know, there's a lot. Basically, you can't find anything where it's not about getting ahead. And this program,
there's nobody in charge. Yeah. It's not about getting ahead. There's no money in it. It's not a religion.
How could this possibly work? That doesn't make any sense.
But I mean, that would be a misconception, I think, is a lot of people think there's a payoff somewhere. And somebody's getting paid off somewhere, some kind of a Ponzi scheme where one guy ends up with all the sobriety or something in the end, that's not the case. So,
yeah. Where's that guy at the top?
What kind of hat's he got on? Okay, so, well, you know what? We're just about out of time. So I often will close with this question, but it really fits here. And the question is, What would you tell a relative newcomer, a guy who's, you know, just getting started, maybe he's a week in or 2 weeks in or whatever, what would you tell him about spirituality? What would you say, if anything?
I don't know that I put it directly in terms of spirituality. I think, you know, it really depends on some measure on what the new guy is. But if he's a guy like me that's the problem solver, that's going to outwork this kind of thing, is to realize there is a God and you're not him, and go on from there.
Yeah, just keep it simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a God and you're not him. It seems fairly easy to understand.
I would say stick around and wait for the miracle to happen, because it happens for everybody that's been around long enough. So.
Happened to you.
Yep.
Happened to him.
Yeah. A lot of people would have put bets in on that.
Yeah, a lot of money changed hands. Huh? Okay, well, I think we're gonna close on that note tonight, and I want to thank you guys both for coming and making this a good evening and an informative evening, I think, for a lot of people. Chuck and Chris were our guests tonight. Thanks to our listeners out there in internet radio land, our studio audience. You know, our loyal studio audience. We'll email out reminders for next week's show. So if anybody out there doesn't get a reminder and wants to get one, please go to our website and sign up for our email list.
Yeah, do that. It's recoveryinternetradio.com. Right. And that's a heck of a weekly reminder. You know, a lot of work goes into that.
There's some good pictures.
Beautiful.
Anyway, so please get in touch with us and sign up. We'd like that. Check recoveryinternetradio.com for all our archive shows, and we'd love to hear from you so we know where you are. So as always, live today, love yourself and your neighbor. Together, we'll trudge the happy road to destiny. We hope you enjoy the show. See you at 8 p.m. next Sunday evening. Thank you, everybody.